During the Jewish Yom with Pirkei Avot, we're up to the second chapter in some Mishnayot. This is the 16th Mishnah. In some Mishnayot, this is the 11th Mishnah. Rabbi Yoshua Omer. Rabbi Yoshua says, we're learning the quotes of the disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right? He had five students, one of which was Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya. So Rabbi Yoshua says, Ayin hara, having a bad eye. What's ayin hara? Someone who looks badly at what other people have. A person says, why don't I have as much as he does? Ve'yetzer hara, and the bad desires. V'sinat ha'biriyot, and hating God's creations, motziin et adam min olam. They cause a person to exit the world. They shorten one's life. Now, on some level, everyone has this. What's ayin hara? So ayin hara isn't only about wealth. Why don't I have as much money as he does? Ayin hara could sometimes be about simpler things. Someone compliments his wife. Someone says, look at how nicely she brings up the kids. Someone says, look at how she's careful to take care of the guests. Look at how she does kibud av v'aim. Sometimes people can say things that a person feels put on the spot. And we'd like to think that within a marriage there's no competition. But realistically, there is. One of the hardships that people have with complimenting their spouse is that there's a feeling of competition. A person wants to feel like he's great. She's also good, but I'm great.
You mean like
between the couple themselves. So ayin hara, we know the classical sense of ayin hara. Ayin hara is a bad eye that I don't want him to have more than me. But we have to know that even within the home, there are areas of ayin hara where a person doesn't want the other side to look better than them, look like they know more than them, like they said a better joke than them. And a person has to know that these are things that shorten one's life. And a person really has to work on developing a good eye. And these are things that a person can develop. With every trait, we begin by doing it in a way that's forced. Every trait that a person tries to conquer, the reason he doesn't have it yet is because it's not natural to him. So the first thing a person has to do is behave as though he has the trait. And then with time, it'll become real. So the first point is ayin hara, and the truth is that a lot of people have ayin hara, and it's really a destructive trait. Ayin hara could also be about everything else. Kid comes home from school, and you tell him, oh, your teacher's stupid, the principal's stupid, the system's stupid, the governor's stupid, the president's stupid, the society's stupid, I have to pay too much taxes, no one in shul understands how important I am and what aliyahs I'm supposed to get, the president's stupid, the rabbi gave a stupid long drasha. There are people who spend their whole life telling their children what's wrong with life, what's wrong with society. They might have valid points, but at the end of the day, they're ruining the kid's life. Because if you can't have appreciation for life, then nothing you have is good. Someone posted a comment. They said their parents were strict with them, so they decided that they're going to give their kids everything. And that they're surprised to see that their kids are spoiled and unhappy. Here they wanted to give their kids everything, and they gave them nothing. What you give your kids is not only about quantity, it's also about attitude. If you could teach them to be happy with what they have, then they're much richer than other kids who have much more. I was at the park and two parents were talking to one another. So one parent said, I don't get it. My kids have all the toys and your kids are so happy they don't have any toys. My kids have their own room themselves and your kids are all cramped in one room and your kids are happy and my kids are not. Why? So the second parent said, I'm not sure why, but I think that my kids are happy with what they have. When they look and they say, we want a Barbie and we want a this and we want a that, So we tell them, wait a second, but what do you have? Some parents, what they do every night, they ask their kids to review, what good thing happened to you today? What fun thing happened to you today? And if you get your kids used to that, you're developing within them an appreciation for what they have. Society, Western society, develops within us a desire to have more. The whole system, the whole economic system is set up on getting you to buy more. You have a laptop, so you need a better laptop. You need a higher speed. You need better graphics. You need a better gaming card. There are a million ways you could get better. So if you're going to stick to the same Apple you got 10 years ago, we're not going to be very happy. How are we going to make money? So Apple makes it work, right? Apple is the only computer company where you hold on to your laptop for 5, 7, 10 years and you're still happy, and then you tell your friend to buy one and then they do well anyways. But most companies don't work that way. Rabbi Yeshua tells us you should know that what takes a person out of the world, the first point is ayin hara, having a bad eye, looking and saying, why does he have more than I do? There are many stories to illustrate this, but I think the point is already understood. So it's a point to work on, and the truth is that to a great extent, much of our happiness revolves around our capacity to work on this. I repeatedly get emails and people call that they want to get divorced, and they all have good reasons. Every person has a good reason. I've yet to meet a couple that doesn't have a legitimate reason they should get divorced. I haven't met them. Every couple I've met has a very good reason why they should get divorced. But at the end of the day, they shouldn't get divorced. They should change their attitude. It's a question of how you view things. If I view things and I say, well, why doesn't she do more? Then I'm never going to be happy. And if I view things and I say, but look at how much she's doing, so I will be happy. It's a question of attitude, and everyone can develop that attitude. This isn't a class for tzaddikim. This class is for us, at a basic level. It's a question of attitude. The Gemara says when a person would get married, they would ask him matzah or motze. The pasuk says matzah isha matzah tov. If you found the wife, you found good. The pasuk says motze ani mal mimavtet isha. I find the woman more bitter than death. Which one are you? Are you a person that's finding the woman to be more bitter than death, or have you found the wife? You found good. So what are you asking the guy the morning after marriage? He doesn't know yet. Give him a year. Give him 2 years. Give him 10 years. Why are you asking him now? The answer is that you were telling him the key is in you. What type of husband are you? Are you always finding out, is this a good marriage or a bad marriage? How does she pair up with my mother, with my sister, with my sister-in-law, with my neighbor's wife? Then you're never going to be happy. When we ask a guy the next morning, are you happy or aren't you happy? We're asking him, have you found a wife? Is your attitude in marriage, I found it, this is great? Then you'll be happy. If your attitude is, I'm still finding out, is this right, is this good, is it not good? Well, then you're never going to be happy. So which type of guy are you? We could ask you the morning after your marriage. The next morning we could already ask you, what's your attitude? Ayin hara. Is it a good eye or a bad eye? The key is not in what type of spouse you have. The key is in you. I always tell you guys that Hasanim come, they're married 6 months, a year, and they walk in very upset. And I say, don't tell me, I'll tell you. And they'll say, Rabbi, you can't, I bet you don't know. And I say, I'll tell you. She's a witch. She's worse than a witch. Witches are nice next to her. She's the worst demon God created on planet Earth, and you had to land up with her. And the guy looks at me and says, if you knew, why didn't you tell me? Well, I know that every chassan feels that way. If not a half a year after marriage, a year after marriage, 2 years after marriage, at some point you'll feel that way. And it's normal. And you know what? Many kalas feel that way too. Many women feel that way. How come he's such a bum? Gets out of bed late, doesn't go to minyan, barely brings home a parnasa, doesn't appreciate anything I do, doesn't treat my parents nicely, doesn't treat my siblings nicely. What do I land up with? What kind of... This is a human being. I know what human beings are like. No one has a husband as bad as mine. Every spouse could be convinced of that. But it begins with our attitude. How do I view my spouse? I'll tell you the truth. I've seen wives of the most successful people be very upset that they got stuck with a lemon. Many of wives and husbands. They say Michelle Obama isn't too pleased. Well, I don't want to talk about her husband, but you know, he did make it to be president of the United States. It does say something. Okay. I don't know. In every marriage and in every relationship, we could look at the relationship and say, I got stuck. I could The more I know a person, the more I can tell you what's wrong with them. So once you're married to a person, then you really know what's wrong with them. You know better than they do what's wrong with them. You could teach them a thing or two about what's wrong with them. But the Mishnah tells us, you want to know, it's a question of what eye are you looking with? And in life, that's a major question. Now, we've had this class where we had a few divorcees sitting in class. And invariably, they would feel challenged by what I said, and they would raise their hand and say, Rabbi, believe me, not every wife is like that. Some are really, really terrible. Okay, I don't know why, you know, there are terrible people in the world, but I can tell you that in every marriage, if you can interview the spouses individually and quietly and promise them that no one will hear the results of your survey, and you ask them, can you describe a really terrible, horrible, inconsiderate person, a person that you'd really, you wouldn't wish other people to be stuck with? Most people would say their own spouse. Surprise, isn't it? That's not what you'd expect people would say. It's not what you'd expect people would say. It's not what your parents told you, hopefully. Hopefully they didn't share with you those sentiments. But it's up to us, because it's a question of what I am I looking with? The truth is that the better you know a person, the more you know their faults. A person can have everything and yet look at what they don't have. Ayin hara is... that bad eye is Korach. What was Korach? Korach had everything. He was the wealthiest Jew. He was up there with aristocracy. He was one of the wealthiest people, if not the wealthiest person that ever lived on earth. And he envisioned, he had prophecy or some kind of vision in which he saw that his descendant would be greater than Moshe and Aaron put together. So he's headed for the top. And yet, he looks at Moshe and Aaron and he looks at what he's got and he says, but they have more than me, I want more. And so he's willing to endanger everything, his whole future, and he loses everything. Ayin hara. So the Mishnah warns us, this is what takes a person out of the world. And you'll ask any person that's headed for divorce, he's telling you that he's headed for his future. This is the only way that he'll have a good future. To continue like this is doomed. But the future is in... Sometimes you just gotta cut off and start from scratch. Maybe, you know, there is a mitzvah of divorce. It does exist in the Torah. But the divorce rates today don't qualify. Meaning, there are so many people getting divorced, it's not... It can't be that all of them are like that. Quite the contrary. The Mishnah warns us that they're all people that the Torah approves they should get divorced. You have to realize that getting divorced is hurting a person the greatest pain you could hurt them.
But isn't it the case that most people shouldn't have gotten married in the first place?
I would not say that, no. I would say that most people could make it work. It's a question of their attitude. And it takes one to tango.
But if you didn't have the right attitude at the beginning...
Doesn't matter. Meaning... When you guys are in the dating classes, then we'll discuss what you look for when you're dating. This class is about what you do after you're already married. Once you're married, then the question is your attitude. And I can tell you, until you know what's going on behind the scenes, you don't realize how each couple has their major, major issues. I'm talking major. Major issues. But from a distance, you look at your neighbor, and he's happy with his wife. Yeah, she's normal. Everyone will tell you, I know what normal people are like. I've been living on this planet for a few years. I know. No one's like my wife. She's crazy. Yeah, but you know what? Ask your neighbor. He'll tell you the same about his wife. Your wife's the normal one, but his wife's the crazy. But people don't share this with you. When they come to your house on Shabbos, when you see them in shul, everyone's happy and lovey-dovey. Everything's great. They don't show you what's going on behind closed doors. But the truth is that what's behind it all is, how do I view? It starts with me. How do I view the world? And the Mishnah warns us, Ayin hara, a bad eye. And a bad eye starts with the fact that I am not happy with my lot. If I could be content with what I've got, then I can make it work. I told you guys the story. A guy came to me intent on divorce, and he said to me all the philosophical reasons why he could be such a better Jew, and he could be so much more productive, and he has so much to offer Klal Yisrael, and she's not letting him. She needs her villa. He has to work all day to support her fantasies and her beautiful house and the car she needs to drive and everything. And I told him, hey buddy, what does the Gemara tell us? Dayenu. He's coming with religious claims. I told him, the Talmud tells us, is she feeding your kids? Are you living like husband and wife? She's bringing them up in a Jewish way of life. That's enough. She doesn't owe you more than that. Ah, she owes you. Yeah, in the Ksuba it says she should do more than that. But in order to have a legitimate claim for divorce, it's got to be it. She's not willing to do the most basic things in a marriage. Well, the most basic is she's bringing up the kids normally. The normal, you think she should do more of this, less of that. But at the end of the day, she's bringing them up like normal human beings, normal Jews. She's feeding them. She's living with you as husband and wife. Okay. So you're not the happiest person in the world. That's not enough. So what? So make it work. Yeah.
Would having expectations that are, like, let's say, like, expecting that life should, that maybe if I expect my marriage to be what I imagine my parents' marriage to be, like, which was, I imagine, to be a very good marriage. So I imagine, if I imagine, whatever, that life should be like, I don't know, without cell phones. I always go at that. Like, my wife is going to be answering cell phones here and there. So, and I don't like that. So it's like, when I'm speaking to her, she just starts like interrupting me. So is that something that I'd be expecting too much to say that she should never answer her phone when I'm speaking to her? Or is that something 21st century I should just sort of lower my expectations?
I think you could try to work things out with your spouse. It's very good to try and work things out. I'm not saying forgo everything. Talk. Try to understand one another. Try to reach a common ground. And if at the end of the day it doesn't work for her, so fine. So that's one point which you would have liked and you're not going to get. Come on, move on with life.
But is that something that nowadays I should be... I'm saying before, like just pre-marriage stuff.
That's for a different class. Pre-marriage is a different class. Thursday night if you want. Yeah.
So if this man is not happy, he's not guaranteed. If he divorces and gets married again, he's not guaranteed that he's going to be happy. But the question is, the person should really suffer if he's really, really unhappy. Because if the person is unhappy, he won't have any will to...
He shouldn't suffer. He shouldn't suffer. He should change his attitude.
Okay, but as you said, you know, like there, it's a marriage. There is another person. So maybe it's also the...
Takes one to tango. Takes one to make a marriage work. Takes two to destroy it. Yeah.
I have one more question. Should I also try to be more positive about everything in the world, like the economy, the just everything in general? Is that as a way of working on this?
That's a longer conversation. Maybe sign up tomorrow, Tuesday night. We have time. We could discuss it. Marriage is exhausting.
But
you have to.
Unhealthy.
I'm not saying to the point of unhealthy, but exhausting. Yeah, the nature of marriage is that it's exhausting.
Why?
Because marriage is about giving, and when you give, it's exhausting. It's tiring. No, they have a saying. You're going to have a honeydew weekend. You know what a honeydew weekend is?
Surely, if two people are together mentally, then it isn't giving.
I didn't follow?
If two people are together mentally, then it isn't forgiving. They're agreeable to each other. So it wouldn't be a burden.
Impossible. Impossible.
I don't
agree. Okay. As much as two people can be almost concentric circles, as much as they can be similar, that almost, when you're in close proximity, is going to have many explosions. The nature of marriage, two people have to be different. They're not going to be the same.
Yeah.
And that the Torah already calls him an Ezer Kenegdo, assistant who's opposite him, because she is opposite him. And the mere fact that she's a female, let's say they were identical, the mere fact that she's a female already means there's going to be hardships there. So, not possible. Oh, that's why we said that's in our dating class. We do discuss looking for someone. We don't say just draw lots. The first girl that'll marry you, you should marry her. Obviously not. You do try to find someone who is the most compatible. But at the end of the day, whoever you're married, you're going to walk into marriage thinking this is great, this works, we understand one another, everything's perfect. And then after a period, you'll suddenly realize, hey, wait a second, there are real problems here, there are real issues, and there are real things we don't see eye to eye on, and this isn't working. And that's not called it isn't working. That's called it is working. Now you got to figure out how to make it work pleasantly. Meaning every marriage initially it's fun, it's easy, it's good, and then reaches a point where you say, this is not working. That's normal in marriage. When you reach that point is when you have to start saying to yourself, wait, what are my expectations? Let me take down my expectations. Let me figure out how to make this work. Let me figure out how to make it palatable to her. But the key work starts here, not there. And it's normal to hit that point that says this is not working. That's normal. I don't think you could have a marriage on the planet that won't hit that point. And in our generation, it's even more so. So now the question is, how do we work it out? I'm not saying you should live a miserable life. I'm saying, okay, but realize that the route to making it better is within ourselves, not by making demands on our spouse. Sometimes it means compromising. Compromising on what I want to accomplish in life, or compromising on how I'm going to accomplish it. I'll give you an example. There was a couple who... should I give you a really hard example? you can take me to task over the example. But... okay, let's take a simple example. There was a couple who got married, and she liked watching TV. He didn't want a TV in the house. Okay. They come to a compromise that she's going to watch TV with headphones. Okay, it works during the first year of marriage because she has more time to watch TV. But after 2 or 3 years, there are kids, and she's in the kitchen, and she needs her TV on in the kitchen too. He goes crazy. He can't stand having the TV on. Back and forth and back and forth and explosion and back and forth and back and forth, and finally he realizes he's going to have to live with the TV on. So they come to a certain compromise that when he's sitting for dinner with her, the TV won't be on. But when he's at home, the TV's still on. And when she can, she sits with the headphones on. But many times she can't. She needs the TV. He can't stand the TV. Right. But you have to realize that the worst thing you could do is fight with your spouse. I don't believe that TV can harm your kids as much as fighting with your spouse can. So if your choice is having a TV or fighting with your spouse, have the TV and don't fight with your spouse. And I'm against TV. I'm really against TV. But are you okay? You know, at the end of the day, are you going to win? What's going to be ultimately? Ultimately, you'll still have the TV, only you'll be fighting about it. That's what really happens. And that's what you come to the realization. You come to the realization, okay, we'll take 2 steps back. A couple called up Rav Simcha Cohen. He's a big marriage expert. And she says, I need this, and he can't stand this. And we're married 6 months, 8 months, and I need it, and he can't stand it. So what did he tell them? He said, it's a fight. So she said, what do you mean? He said, well, you yell and he'll yell, and you yell and he'll yell, and you'll come to a conclusion. So she said, what do you mean? You're the marriage expert. What are you telling me to yell for? So he said, this is the way marriage works. You start off marriage, everything's going smoothly, comfortably, everything works. Suddenly you hit a bump on the road. And on this bump, you say, hey, I got to go right. And he says, I got to go left. And then you start pulling. What happens? You try to go with him a little bit. You try to compromise. And then you say, I can't. I got to go the other way. He tries coming with you a little bit. And he says, I can't. And he pulls the other way. Which way are you going to go? So in our day and age, people say, okay, this marriage isn't working. Goodbye. Forget it. I don't want a TV. She wants a TV. Goodbye. That's not the way it works. The way it works is each one tries to compromise as best as they can. But each of us has a point where we'll compromise beyond what we can do. And then at some point, we'll explode. I can't. This is driving me crazy. I can't. We can't continue like this. And then the other side tries to compromise. And then they explode. And they say, well, I can't. This is crazy. I can't go on like this. And it goes back and forth until one side realizes they could. Meaning... marriage is, we're both trying to do our best, right? Yeah, I'm trying to give, she's trying to give, right? Every husband thinks his wife isn't trying to give enough, and every wife thinks her husband isn't trying to give enough. But the truth is both sides are trying to give. It's the truth. At whatever level they're comfortable. Both sides are trying to give. And at some point, what happens is, we've defined the limit by virtue of that really being the limit. You with me? And that's when you explode and you say, I can't anymore. So yeah, I'm not saying you should take every explosion your wife does seriously. Meaning sometimes she'll explode quicker. Sometimes she's got a quicker trigger than you. And that doesn't mean she can't be on that. That's something that you learn with time.
Every week, right? described, but I'd say a bunch of weirdos, right? And but like social problems, like I wouldn't have, you know, just like trash from the gutter and Manchester accent and what's the word? You mean, yeah, it would be a burden to be stuck with someone like that. Yeah, that would be exhausting. If you get someone from a decent family, then it wouldn't be a burden. I wouldn't say if you get a decent girl from a decent family, it wouldn't be exhausting to be that person. If you get someone that's like weighing away an effort, that's an English phrase, or like some working class person that's like drinking 20 pints every night, yeah, it might be a burden to be with that person. It'd be exhausting. But you get someone from a decent family, which is right, then it wouldn't be exhausting.
So I'll tell you, I don't want to argue with you. I respect what you said. I want to make a deal with you.
Yeah.
Take into account that the stories I gave are from people from decent homes, especially tonight. I don't remember previous stories. But the stories I gave were about people really from upper class, people who are making nice livings, have good education. Socially, they're considered normal, not misfits. And they come from a stable family. And just consider that what I said might be a possibility, might be true. I'm not saying accept it as truth. Accept that it could be true. And so when you're married, if it happens to work out the way I'm saying, you'll remember that someone told you this is normal for good people. That's all I want. I agree with you that what I say to most people who are not married sounds ridiculous. I agree. And I'm happy that's so. I can tell you that the feedback I get from guys who graduated from here and are married is that this at least prepared them for life. Meaning I have a choice. I could focus on all the positive and beauty of married life, which is what I told myself I would do tonight. I said, you at least got to start positive. Or I could be realistic about how we contend with the hardships of married life. It's much more pleasant to hear a class that says married life is the source of all beauty. Hashem said that marriage is a blessing He gave unto mankind. God created the woman as man's assistant so that together they could build the planet. And the truth is that there is nothing more beautiful than married life. You see that when God wanted to find a metaphor to describe His relationship with the Jewish people, He chose the metaphor of marriage. So you see that it has the greatest potential in the world. It is by far the greatest relationship that a person can have. It can be the source of one's strength. It could be the source of one's happiness. It could be the source of one's tranquility. It could be the source of one's Torah. It could be the greatest partnership for growth, the greatest partnership for bringing God's name into the world. All of that is true. But I assume you know all of that, and I don't think you gained anything by my telling you all of that. On the other hand, if we learn the Mishnayot and learn how we can apply these Mishnayot practically in our lives and help ourselves become better people and have better marriages, I think you've gained something practical. It might not be as pleasant to listen to, but I think it's more practical. Even though the other points are also true. There is the beautiful side, but I think that most people don't get to that beautiful side because they themselves have not become better people. Yeah. But again, don't accept what I said as truth. Just as a possibility. Maybe.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, but I don't see why it should on balance be exhausting.
Okay. I hope you're right. My goal is that you shouldn't get divorced.
Like
my goal is you should be married and at least not get divorced. Afterwards, you work on making it better. You'll come back and review these classes. At least you should realize that if it's exhausting, it's normal. It's a normal marriage. One of our alumni was looking at an apartment to rent. Okay, he's engaged to be married, and there's an apartment one flight up from us that's available for rent. So I told him he's looking for an apartment. I said, look, there's an apartment one flight up. I could tell you the pros, the cons. I know the apartment. I've been living in this building the better part of a decade. But I have to tell you, talk to your Kala, because I'm not sure she's going to want to live one flight up from your rabbi that I'll hear every time you guys yell at one another. So I'm not sure it's a good idea. So he looks at me and he says, yell at one another? Baruch Hashem, he's a chassan, the stars in his eyes. He says, who said yell at one another? What are you talking about, rabbi? So I said, look, you're right. Bezrat Hashem, you guys will never yell at one another. Everything will go with peace and tranquility. And I agree with you. But in the event that you're a normal couple, so then talk to her. Maybe she won't want to live next to us. Yes?
My friend, when they got married, when I went to visit them for one Shabbat, before the Shabbat, I see the television stays on the floor, and he said to her, I don't want the television to stand on the table, the television is not allowed to be in the house. So she called me, she asked me to put the television on, and I had a small argument about this stupid television.
Oh, you hear? That's a normal couple.
And she is educated. She's very well educated. Very high degree.
Yeah, but in England, half the people go to university.
She is very high educated. She's very high educated.
Trying as many working class people to university.
Now, yeah, but she comes from a very good family, and she's a jurist.
What you say is a good family.
Okay.
But she's a very good family, and despite about the television, I was like, and then I told her, I can't wait to get married.
Okay, the next point is Yetzer Hara, which also we have to know where our desires are focused. People spend their lives in fantasy land. One of the things that are very common is that people within a marriage are spending their lives in fantasy land. In psychology, they have a term for it. It's called the better other. People could spend their life thinking, if I'd have married that girl that I dated or this person or whatever, then life would be better. And the Torah warns us, losachmod, the person has to know that the desire... There's a desire within us that's normal, it's animalistic, and it can be on the internet that a person is looking and saying, well, my wife doesn't come close to what I'm seeing out here. And this desire, that a person lets his desires go wild, and sometimes he says, what's wrong with that? No, there's a lot wrong with that. That's part of what shortens a person's life. And the last point is sinat habiriyot. Hating God's creatures, which encompasses everyone. Everyone, guys. I'll tell you something that maybe I shouldn't say here, but I'm willing to sign that Rav Bigun would agree with me. Believe it or not, it includes Arabs too. Yeah, Arabs, right. They're God's creatures too. The fact that today we're at a state of war, and unfortunately we have to behave as such, is a point that we have to deal with. It's true. In a time of war, sometimes you have to shoot to kill. Sometimes you have to attack. Sometimes you have to bomb. But we have to realize that we shouldn't strive to hate. Hate is not a positive thing. All of God's creatures are God's creatures. It's true that sometimes, you know, you have a lion attacking you, you have to kill it. You have a nation that expresses their desire to destroy you, they're your enemy. Yeah, sometimes you have to fight, and sometimes you even have to hate. But you have to realize that in general, hate is not a positive thing. And hating, what? Yeah, this is a basic Torah concept. People sometimes get very confused. That we have no goal to hate, quite the contrary. The Mishnah warns us that hate of God's creatures removes them from the world, and that includes plants, animals, and human beings, obviously. So here too there's room to expand, but we're out of time, so we're going to have to pause here till next week.